Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Now, live from Chicago, the Hal Sparks radio program mega worldwide.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass.
Hal Sparks, actor, comedian, and multimedia personality.
And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Hal Sparks.
All right, let's do this.
Obviously, we have a lot to talk about this week, not the least of which is that we averted another government shutdown. I think strictly just for the joy of seeing the backbiting on the Republican side and Marjorie Taylor Greene attacking the speaker, but only kind of, sort of.
And this one did not get a big news cycle traction. They're not getting the same lift out of it.
Well, see, I think there's a genuinely good reason for that from the Republican side. And by the way, welcome everybody. It's Hal Sparks radio program, Mega Worldwide. That's the sound of Johnny Million you're hearing there, and also possibly his cat at any given time. And
I poured my coffee too full.
Very full. It's dangerously full.
You see it?
Yes, I could. I could see it.
Yeah. So that's too full.
Yeah, that was like 70s coffee cup, right to the brim, right?
Filled to the rim with brim.
Which I gotta say,
my God,
sounds naughty.
It does,
right? But in the interim, we had great fun this week watching Marjorie Taylor Greene's half keistered attack on Mike Johnson, where she filed a motion to vacate, but she's not gonna ask for it to be brought to the floor anytime soon, because you know it's there in case she needs it. You know what I mean? Just in case of lack of chaos, break glass. Think of it as a fire extinguisher. If the fire in this case was normal life, right? This is the thing I think they fear the most. It's
gotta be.
Yeah. It's very curious. Now we will talk about, in the second hour, with Philip Bittner when he joins us from Kiev, the terrorist attack in Moscow that happened
crazy
last night, brutal. I unfortunately, because of the Telegram channels that I follow regarding the Ukraine war, I've seen more than my fair share of the actual video from inside that event.
Oy vey.
And it is heartbreaking. And let me state unequivocally before we even start the show, that kind of attack on civilians in that circumstance,
anywhere,
always, always bad. Anywhere. Always.
No matter the populace.
It is an act of grotesque cruelty. I have no interest in even trying to hedge the whys and the wherefores and the kind of, you know, the justifications and all that. Anybody who's even talking like that is a maniac. Forget it. No, 100 times no. If people have seen this and they still oddly think it's okay, I don't morally
that anyone deserves anything like that.
Yeah, it's grotesque. It is abhorrent behavior, and there are no excuses for it. None. And I can't be more firm about that. Yes. One of the great things about democracy and why it's a good thing and why it's worth protecting is because it's sort of new on Earth in terms of human
relatively
existence.
Speaking.
Yes. That we all get together and hash out our differences through a vote. And you, over the time between the last vote and the next one, you try to win people over to your ideas instead of just slaughtering the other side till you can overpower their tribe with your tribe. That kind of garbage as a way of working out your differences is bad enough when it's nation states. But the idea that you could somehow, implement that kind of behavior by basically just slaughter raids, like the Vikings, the Mongolians, the Comanches, the Germanic tribes around Bavaria at any given time, the Nazis on a greater scale. No, 100 times no. So there, I just wanted to state that as our baseline whenever discussing that. You're not going to hear anybody say, well, they had it coming in this situation from me or my show or anybody that's on my show. And if they do, it's their opinion, and I don't believe I will push back on it.
I'm sorry to pop in with this, Hal, but thank you to Grande Ronde with an amazing super chat. They are looking forward to seeing the Sexy Liberal crew in Portland in September.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Grande Ronde. I appreciate that. Hold on one second. I think I can now, we'll see, hold on, put a featured chat element on the screen.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Let's see if it works. There it is.
Look at that.
Yeah. Thank you, Grande. That's very big. I have to bring it down a little bit. That's a little. Thank you, Grande Ronde.
Very big. I got to bring that down a little bit.
Well, it happens. Berkeley Dowd, thank you so much as well. Thanks, guys, for your support. Patreon.com/Hal Sparks. And, of course, don't forget to subscribe to Johnny Million Show as well on YouTube and Twitch. It's Johnny Million now. That's him. Yeah, yeah. So did you I got to say, I wasn't nail biting any of the stuff this week in terms of the budget at all. I know some people were like, oh, my God.
No, that's why I said, like, if it gets nail biting, that's when I hear about it all the time. But in this case, I didn't hear about it till it was already resolved.
Oh, I see. You were referring specifically to the budget fight about whether it was going to pass versus Marjorie Taylor Greene's impotent, rage-filled nonsense getting pressed.
Well, that's she's kind of right on schedule, isn't she?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, maybe do they have like, you know, they used to talk about certain Native tribes used to have a talking stick that you would pass around, or a talking feather, where the only person who can pipe up at the meeting is the person holding the talking stick. Which, by the way, when you talk about levels of bureaucracy the world over, just imagine how they had to come to, okay, nobody talks unless they're holding the stick, right? You know what I mean? Like, we've all been there. I don't care if it's a family gathering. I don't care if it's a
team building,
Mike, huh?
Team building at an office retreat.
Totally. Team building at an office retreat. Like, at some point, somebody was like, all right, everybody shut up. Okay. Nobody – see the stick I'm holding?
Nobody say nothing because I got to take a whiz.
Yeah, right. I'm holding the stick. That means I can talk. When I pass you the stick, you can talk. Everybody else, shut up, right? And, because understand, all cultural elements that we experience as sort of normal and perfunctory, or even, you know, tribally significant or governmentally significant over time, are the result, and democracy is the biggest one I can think of all the other systems sucking so bad at one point where they're like, no, forget, like, even a pretend democracy is better than this czar nonsense, right? That's that. Even the fact that Russia had to have an election, even a farcical one, proves that every other system they tried to keep in place was garbage, right? But I am so fascinated historically, you know. Everybody will get caught up in guns, germs, and steel and the idea of, like, you know, superiority of technology and that kind of stuff. But it's the little human interactions, you know, the idea that at some point we have to build a stage because some of the people dancing are worth watching more than the other people who are dancing, right? Or at some point we need to build some sort of, either build this building so you can hear everything that's on stage, because all I hear is banjo, right? Right? All I hear are the big tinny instruments, right? All I hear is the dude with the whingiest voice. And you know, listen to old bluegrass music and hey, the kind of voice and the banjo.
The high lonesome.
Right. That's because it cut through the room. No matter what the acoustics were, you could hear it everywhere. Same thing with, like, traditional Chinese, like, Peking opera. They never got around really to building, although they probably would have gotten around to building, like, big buildings that are acoustically designed so that you can hear every element of stuff.
Yeah.
So, but then the Cultural Revolution came in and they were like, everything up till now sucks. We're not interested. And they just destroyed it all. And so they never really got that sort of transition moment from the pangy clangy to the deeper, more resonant version of it until it was pop. Mm. Right. And yeah, bagpipes are another one. Bagpipes have a drone for the nearbys, but many people will remember, and I'm getting to a point, believe it or not. Many people might know this story, but the Scots were being attacked by the English, and back in the day, they would say, "We're going to meet you on the hustings, 2 days hence," mm-hmm. and the battle will at Gavinbrae will happen, right? And so, 2 days of the smaller team sweating and pooping themselves, and 2 days of the bigger team sharpening their superior weapons, right? Mm-hmm. That's what the battle. Basically the lead up to it was. And the Scots at one point knew they were massively outnumbered. The Brits had way more soldiers. So what they did was they called every piper and drummer they could find in the area, just everybody, and said, "You guys are going to start. We're going to be like 50 miles away, but or like 30 miles away. And it's in the hills. So it echoes and carries. And you guys are just going to march today and tomorrow towards the battlefield, playing your drums and playing the pipes." And by the time they showed up, the British had fled, because apparently they were like, it was so huge that they were like, if that's the size of the band, the army's ginormous.
I like that.
Yeah. So they scared them off with just the music, and no one died that day. And I think a valuable lesson in that is that music is superior to all other forms of art. And that it can stop death and destruction. And when you attack a concert hall, you are a special kind of scumbag. Never an excuse for it. Not ever. So anyways, we've got to take a break. We come back, we're going to deal with Marge's impotent attack on Mike Johnson and the flailing silliness of that. By the way, Donald Trump has not met any kind of a deadline where he'd have to find money yesterday. Not happening. And we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to the Hal Sparks radio program, Mega Worldwide.
So, welcome back. There's so much noise and news, I will say, about what's going on in Russia with all this. And let me just also be abundantly clear. I don't believe a lick of it until, it's probably 10 years from now, like in 1991, where we get a look at the real records. That's just the way it is. Like at this point, I am so dubious about everything involved that there's no reason, none whatsoever, that we should just buy it. Hook, line, and sinker.
No.
Believe that they know what they're talking about. Like, just no, not in any by any measure. Yeah, I'm not operating even in the cartoonish belief system that part of it is real. The hard part will be working out how it's affecting Kiev. And again, I said it this morning that this is going to be about like Operation Beat Him Until He Says Ukraine, which is consistent with how these folks tend to. The Russians tend to operate, and what we know about the Moscow apartment fires that got Putin in power in the first place, and how he could entrench power specifically so that he would have control over this. So yeah, I gotta say, I have no reason to buy anything, even that these are the guys they caught that are real, any of that stuff. So. And again, it's even more difficult when you're dealing with something as serious as this to not want to react to, what's going on with it. But at the same time, it for all practical purposes, it's just not verifiable on any front. So that's the issue I find is most difficult in the circumstance. That said, like I said, we will discuss that fully with Phil in the next hour. But right now, on a domestic front, I got to say, it's like from the sublime to the absolutely ridiculous. We have, you know, just like the Republicans continue to be the lamest excuse for a political party I have ever seen. Now, one of the big controversies, I don't know if you heard this, did you hear that MSNBC hired Ron McDaniel, right?
Really?
Yeah, as a pundit. Now,
okay.
Let me be clear about this as well. I'm for it. Not because I think she has anything valid to say or anything worth saying, but for two reasons. One, it will drive Republicans to the vapors, to the fainting couch. And it will irritate the hell out of Donald Trump, and it will be full of all kinds of, like, I knew it, right? And what's she going to come in and talk about behind the scenes stuff with the Republican Party and why they couldn't raise any money? I don't care. What am I worried about? She's going to convince somebody that watches MSNBC to vote for Republicans? It feels like this is her transition to becoming a part of the Lincoln Project, which is fine with me also. But I mean, she's going to have garbage takes. And I'm not going to actually learn anything from what she's saying, because we already know, you know, the sort of who's who behind the scenes, the Russian connective tissue of the Republican Party and the NRA and all that stuff. So I honestly don't care. But there's an upside and a downside to everything. The only valuable part of this entire thing on any level is how much it will drive Republicans nuts. So I don't want her fired from it. I don't care. And I think it's hilarious. I'm not going to stop watching MSNBC because they hired her. I think it's a massive troll, and it works like a charm, because look at the freak out online from them about that very thing. Now, yes, did MSNBC viewers get mad? Absolutely. Did they get, you know, were some people apoplectic about it? Sure. And I get it, because she's awful. But you have to understand, it's her value just her existence at MSNBC trolls the hell out of Republicans in an election year. And again, I don't expect anybody who watches MSNBC to go, hey, maybe the Republicans should be given another shot. Like, it's silly. It's just really, you know what I mean? And as much as she's got garbage takes on everything or whatever, we're not talking about somebody who was like an architect of the Iraq war being added to the list. You know right. what I mean? You got to have a scale at some point. But it seems to me, and there's a lot of strange elements. Did you see the, Texas Paul and I talked about this yesterday, but the cover of the New York Post that showed a bunch of what I call roofing age males charging through a fence at the border and overrunning, you know, five Not National boy. Guard guys. Well, overrunning five age. Of them. That's what I mean. Like, most of them are here to work. You know, they're like military age males. I'm like, yes, but they're more like hanging out in front of Home Depot trying to get work age males when, you know, in terms of what they do when they actually get here. You know what I mean? So that is just one of the, like, they're pejorative, I find disgusting and not realistic. They call it an invasion, all that stuff. Yeah, it's silly. So ultimately, these guys in this cover, have you seen the cover image?
No.
The New York Post? Okay. So the New York Post had, I'll see if I can find it real quick.
This is all about the narrative of the terror coming from others.
Yeah. So let's see. I'll see if I can. There we go. Moment When Migrants is what it said. I think it was the title of the thing. Migrants overpower
Oh my.
National Guardsmen at the thing, and the cover image of it. Let's see if I can find this, but the New York Post has this cover it's just atrocious, but it's all about like migrants overpowered National Guardsmen, and they're like being charged past them. And it's just like all these guys, and they're like, it is an invasion. And then you watch the video of it, and the guys that charged at these guys ran up to the gate at the, at the actual border and stopped and couldn't get through. That was it.
Overpowering?
No. Well, I mean, they overpowered the five guys who didn't want them tearing up the piece of fence, I guess, is the idea. Let's see. So this, this cover art that they were putting out is particularly deceiving.
Yeah.
Right. That was the point of it, was to make sort of a mockery of, any efforts, because border funding passed in the bill, not all of it, not the same level that was in the border bill that went through, mm-hmm. right? But a decent amount, and certainly an improvement across the board. And again, Marjorie Taylor Greene and her ilk all voted against it. So they voted against the very border protections they're saying need to happen. And there's a reason why they did that, because Donald Trump's only thing he can run on is migrants in the country are going to kill you and take your stuff, and in the process kill you while they're taking your stuff. I don't know, whatever. And now their entire hope rests on hoping that something awful happens between now and the election.
Yeah. Oh, they're hoping that the market will crash. They're hoping there'll be some sort of terrorist event. They're hoping for anything bad.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And because they don't really have an option.
Nope.
Right. They don't.
They got no policies that people vote for.
Right. And certainly none that specifically will affect the, jobs, energy, anything that's looking to the future. Right. They're hoping gas goes to $9 a gallon.
Right. Right.
But all that kind of stuff. So let's see. It was all over Twitter yesterday, but I know I have it. Cover image. Yeah, I'll find it. It's just a gross, misrepresentation of it happening. Maybe they've sunk it because the video came out. It's interesting. The SEO on it should bring it right to the top. And it's curious to me that it is not coming up right away. I mean, I know I'll be able to find it on X if I want to, but, you'd think something like this, it would just jump to the top of the pile, right? New York Post migrant, blah, blah, blah. Okay. I'll be able to find. Yeah. So there is a, and I'll show this bit on, and you can hear the, it doesn't matter, Johnny, the, this is the image. I'll show you this real quick for those that at home. There's a cover in the New York Post that showed a bunch of males about all the same height, wearing all the same kind of clothing, all ganging up at one point and busting through razor wire, which is bizarre. And which was partly opened at the beginning of the video. There's a lot about this that is hinky in terms of the clip that was aired. I would like to see the 20 minutes before and 40 minutes after. That would interest me. I think a lot of us feel that way. But this is basically the image, Johnny Million, that you'll see everywhere, which is these guys coming through.
Yeah.
And there's one particular guy, like a soldier, just kind of standing there watching. As soon as they break through or run around, he just steps out of the way and lets it happen. But the interesting part to me is at the tail end of this particular video, which if you back up is amazing. This is them just walking up to a gate. This is not the image you will see on the New York Post that shows them stopped at the gate and not coming through. It's very odd. It's curious to me that that's not the image that they show. And so it does, I agree with Texas Paul, look like a photo op, like they somebody paid these guys to make a run for it. Whether it was Republicans, the Russians, because they have their biggest embassy is in Mexico, or other just troublemakers drawing attention to that area so that they could smuggle other stuff through. There's a myriad of reasons why you would and could do something like this. It's curious to me that it happened, and this cover story comes out on the New York Post the day the Republicans bring the budget to the floor and vote it through. That it is, it seems like a big shiny thing. Oh, I blew past the break. We got to take a break. We'll be back right after this. It's the Hal Sparks Radio Program, Mega Worldwide on WCPT Radio, Chicago's Progressive Talk.
You're locked into the Hal Sparks Radio Program, Mega Worldwide.
So, Johnny Million, I know you enjoy yourself some Republican committees.
Oh yeah. Let's have another. Let's start one of our own.
Exactly. I think one of my favorite things, kids, and I don't know how to get this message out there. And I feel a bit like Lawrence O'Donnell when I talk about it, because he worked inside the White House, and he was a congressional aide, I think, and all kinds of, he's been around it for a long time. And so he's aware of how these things work. And my favorite piece of DF-ery, I'll call it, is when they go, this is a giant bill and nobody has been able to read it. Yes. We're familiar.
Oh,
Johnny Million, if you will.
Could it be why you got on the radio in the first place?
Yeah, it actually is precisely how I ended up on the radio in the first place. And especially when it comes to the world of, healthcare and giant bills that are laws, not just the budget. Now, Johnny, you work in some form of accounting stuff in your day jobby stuff.
Yeah, I do payrolly things.
Right. Okay. Now, real quick, every year, do any of the companies that you work with start from scratch on their budget and their salaries and their hiring? Do they go, all right, everybody back to one and we're all going to discuss your salary for the year?
Or, yeah, there's no carryover. January 1st, that's up for grabs.
Right. It's just every business in the world, January 1st is insane. It's like the first week of January, everybody's just, jockeying or wrestling or fighting for, whatever slice they can get, for the fiscal year. And the worst part is nobody has time to read even what the business is about, what they're trying to accomplish, what the head of the organization wants to make happen, any of that stuff, right?
Sure.
It's just a complete mystery. At the beginning of the year, we have no idea. You can see, ladies and gentlemen, why indeed I am irritated by this giant budget and nobody has time to read it. Okay, two things. One, the government, like any large corporation, is enormous. And so that's why you have committees. Why the budgetary committee specifically, you tell them as a caucus what your priorities are. They go in and try to get them. They come back and tell you what they're able to get and what they aren't able to get. You say, well, we'll walk if it's not this and whatever. And they go, well, we have the votes to get this and maybe I could try this. And you talk back and forth and then they go, yeah, okay, we'll sign off on that. And then they go back and then they do the deep reads part of it. First of all, you shouldn't have to read the entire bill if you trust your caucus, if you trust your members of the committee. And if you don't trust your members of the committee, why are they on there?
Yep.
So everybody knows this. Also, if you'd like to read the budget ever, you can start right now. Might take you a while. Might take you a couple of months even to get through the whole thing and check its little sub notes and that kind of stuff. Work with your staff, break it down into chunks and all that kind of stuff. And then once you've read it, you'll notice that every year is probably about 20 pages that are different. Priority spending, changes, you know, responses to emergencies, that kind of stuff. That's what comes up when you have, in this particular situation, you know, one of the states that that Rand Paul thinks doesn't deserve hurricane relief because they have too many hurricanes, right? You know what I'm talking about? Those folks.
Yeah. Sure.
So this. So the idea that that these guys want to play this with bills is annoying, because again, most of the bills are drafted up either, you know, and have co-signers and all that kind of stuff, because those are the staffs that have gone through it. You can tell whether you can trust it by the co-signers of it. If members of the Freedom Caucus have you know, signed on as a co-sponsor of the bill, rather, then you should be able to trust that one of their staff went through it and broke it down for them, and all the parts that they can support are there, and they got as much as they possibly could. Right? And if one of the members of the Freedom Caucus has, you know, co-sponsored something, even an element, a chunk of the budget, a piece of it, I don't want to hear that nobody's read it, because you've read large swaths of it and you're just not bothering every year to do your job and read the extra 25 pages in changes that, again, someone on your staff could put the whole budget into a PDF reader and choose the latest changes and just read the latest changes, because that's really what you're fighting over. And if it's something you've been fighting about that's in there, that's been in there for years, then you can make a point of going through that just by word search. If you have a particular, you know, bone to pick with a policy or an organization, it doesn't take a lot of work to single that part out and go through it with your staff, break it down, and go after the parts of it that you don't, right? It's not, this part of it isn't rocket science, because look who's responsible for doing it.
Yeah.
So I don't want anybody
just
says,
made me spit on my keyboard, by the way.
Oh, you're welcome. anytime you hear a politician say, nobody's had time to read this, we haven't had time to go over it. One, they are lying to you. Or they're telling you they don't trust their committee members. That's their problem.
Yeah.
But the biggest answer is when they say, especially anybody who, like Ted Cruz or Lauren Boebert, has their own podcast. If you can have a podcast, you have time to read the bill. Do your job. That's your job. That yeah. First thing, going through policy, going through the material evidence with your staff and by yourself is your job more than anything else. Not campaigning, not showing up on Newsmax, none of this. You have one job, and that is knowing what the hell you're talking about, because you bothered to read the bills. And they are in English, aren't they? Yes, they are. Are there parts of them that might be hard to understand? Yes. That's why you have staff. And if your staff are dumber than you are because you're a megalomaniac, it's not their fault. You're an idiot. Right? It's not their fault that you hired someone who does you no good, or is just there to get coffee, or you can, in many cases, outsource your stupidity to, which is what happens when people blame their staff for a screw up. Right? Sometimes staff screw up, that happens. But if the reason you don't know about something is because of your staff, especially materially dealing with a policy you're supposed to care about, that's on you. Remember, Donald Trump knows the best people, you know, like Jeffrey Epstein and Alan Dershowitz and Roy Cohn and and Michael Cohen before he, you know, turned into a real human being.
After he did time in a federal pen.
Right. For lying for to Congress. Why did he lie? Who did he lie for? Yeah, I can't remember. It's almost like trying to remember who was president in 2017 when Tony Bobulinski met Biden for the Bidens, all of them for the first time. That didn't seem weird to anybody this week. Tony Bobulinski, and they did this big charade. And this
guy name is going to make me laugh every time you say it.
I know it is.
I'm convinced you're going to say Tony Bababooey.
Tony Bababooey.
Every time. Tony Bababooey.
You know, Tony Bababooey. Bababooey. So Tony Bababooey comes in there, right? And
I cannot be the first.
Yeah, right. No. Tony Fafafohi. So, Tony Bubbles, right? Tony Bubbles Bobulinski, who, let me be real clear on this. Never met a single Biden family member or Joe Biden or Hunter Biden or Shemp Biden or Chucky Biden or
Shecky.
Shecky Biden. No, none of them. Never met a one until 2017, which was the first year that Joe Biden had been out of office since 1973.
Seriously, yeah.
And that relationship ended acrimoniously within in less than a year, and a year before Biden started running for president. I would say 8 months to 10 months before he started running.
So you're saying he was ripe for the picking.
Right, exactly. And again, it's the weirdest thing. They're like, it's an influence, China money influence peddling scheme. Okay. First of all, anybody who thinks that Biden is owned by the Chinese needs to look at how the Chinese are doing right now compared to how they were doing under Trump. Pre-COVID, he was doing everything he could to suck up to them and even put off his COVID response, trying to get his deal done. So I don't want to hear anything that even the trade war was a farce. It was basically a way that like they could shuffle money in that he could buy farmers' votes in the next election. It's garbage. But let's be abundantly clear. China is at its worst financial and political point that it has been in since Mao, since 40 million people were starved. Ugh. It's that bad right now. So the idea that if they bought something from Biden, he hooked them and conned them. That's the only answer.
Yeah.
He got their money and said, sucker, or it just never happened, which is really what happened. Okay. The other aspect of this is that these guys managed to find the one window where Joe Biden isn't in office and isn't running for office and had no influence to peddle. The Biden,
like I said,
yeah,
right for the picking.
Right, exactly. It's the perfect time because literally there has never been a more like a broader divide between an incoming and outgoing administration in our country's history, at least in our lifetime, certainly. But I mean, I would argue since the 1800s, maybe, where you've got, where one side leaving the White House would have less influence, be less welcome. The only thing even coming close is Trump giving Biden advice. Right. That's the only thing worse.
Right.
But the idea that Biden somehow being vice president in his time in the Senate would somehow be able to work something even in the Senate and get a bill passed up that Donald Trump would sign is absurd. If you were going to buy influence to anybody, you'd completely circumvent the old guard and go straight to the source, which is why Yi Jianming, by the admission of Tony Bobulinski, during the Trump presidency, the head of CEFC, who Tony Bobulinski was trying to get in business with the Bidens and was one of the people who started that deal. Why that guy was spending $50 million on New York real estate, one of which we know is in Trump World Tower across from the UN. But we're about to find out probably this week who owns what in all the Trump buildings.
Ooh.
Because that's the hidden story. We got to take a break. When we come back, that's what I want to talk about. Why can't Donald Trump liquidate this stuff? Why can't he get money? Why can't he get a bond on these things?
Yeah, who's really invested?
It might be because he doesn't actually own these things. He's the front man for foreign investors on these properties. And the list of who lives there is going to come up. We'll be back.
You're locked into the Hal Sparks radio program, Mega Worldwide.
By the way, I'd like to remind everybody, Chicago in August, Sexy Liberal is coming to the Vic Theater.
And
I'm just saying, there might be a special appearance guitar solo from a friend of mine, if I can talk him into it. Yeah, yeah.
Can Mrs. Million come?
Of course you can. You two are my prize guests, along with Tom and a couple of others, and we'll figure it out. It'll be a nice little.
You got a hold of Tom?
I did. He's coming here, so we're gonna hang out. I hope. But anyways,
give him a hug for me.
I will. But get in line, sister. So
I'll take sloppy seconds.
That's really, that is true.
Hey.
I don't even know what that means. I'm just kidding. There you go. This is one of the things I think, while Trump was in office, there's this article. This is from the Orange County Register, but it says the Chinese government and its state controlled entities spent over $5.5 million in properties owned by Donald Trump while he was in office. The largest total payments made by any single foreign country known to date. This is just kind of like the rentals, like he Airbnb'd a bunch of. China is one of 20 countries that made at least $7.8 million in total payments to Trump-owned businesses and properties during his stint in the White House. So he was just, comfortably grabbing money from all these. So the other thing is like the number of companies that state-owned companies. That own property in Trump's different buildings, right? That we've known for a while that, the Chinese bank that owned, two floors of Trump Tower, the Russian mob at one point was running a gambling and human trafficking enterprise out of Trump Tower. Oddly enough, the interesting thing is there was a lot of renting during that time, hoping that they wouldn't, because they weren't full leases, they could get around this kind of short, to act like it was short term, which is, I think the odd thing is like even scarier that it's short term. You know what I mean? Like it would make more sense if they were renters who'd been in there for decades and they just stayed. But when they start showing up and they're like, no, just while you're in office, that's where it's really awkward. Congressional staffers confirmed to Reuters that the Trump World Tower lease requests were never submitted to Congress. That's the, curiously enough. They said that they were stonewalled in their efforts to obtain detailed information about foreign government payments to Trump businesses during his time in office. This new information raises serious questions about the president and his business's potential receipt of payments from foreign governments. This is in 2017. Sorry, this story's from 2019, but the call for it started in 2017. 2 years, they started, this is all these stories. Remember how we heard about him violating the emoluments clause and hiding that stuff all during it? In 2017, they pointed out that nearly $100 million of Russian money has been invested in Trump buildings. They found at least 63 individuals with Russian passports or addresses have bought at least $98.4 million worth of property in 7 Trump-branded luxury towers in southern Florida alone. That would be the Trump Tower Miami is known as like the Russian anchor baby waiting room, he goes, I can tell you speaking for myself, I own nothing in Russia. I have no loans in Russia. I don't have any deals in Russia. Okay.
So someone in the chat actually brought up, could Judge Barbara Jones find out about the, quote, ownership of the Trump properties?
Oh, yeah. Yes. So one of the things that happens is in the dissolution of it, or even the trying to put a lien on it, part of the lien goes that everybody else has to fight for their slice, so that if they need to sell their stake in a building, they're not under his lien. So they got to distance themselves. If they don't, then they could lose their stake in it. And then once they lose their stake in it, the transfer has to say who was involved, because they'll have to sign off on it if they're alive and haven't been pushed out a window, I guess. The volume, representatives of 22 foreign governments spent money at Trump properties just in 2019 alone. The Province for Foreign Governments of the Trump Organization has sent $343,000 to the U.S. Treasury for 2017 and 18. The company did not release underlying numbers to support that figure. So they would just go, this is how much we made. Never mind. No receipts, no nothing. They just wrote the number on a napkin and said, this is what we got. And I got to say, like, that's the thing that we'll unpack once they start dissolving what's left of his phony empire. That, you know, who was like the extent of the lease documents and all that kind of stuff. They end up getting seized as part of this. Like, I'm curious too, in the fraud, in the details, the evidence in the fraud trial, how much information was in what Letitia James and others found that they haven't, you know, they can't charge him with, because that would be Jack Smith's job or somebody else for his being an unregistered foreign agent, or perhaps, you know, lobbying or graft or bribery or any of that stuff. A big portion of this I'm curious, they have to have a ton of the material background on who was in the building, what they were paying for the properties itself, whether they paid above or below market price.
Ed's 3D Tech put this in the chat. The cascade of debt will start Monday night and will open everything.
Yep, exactly. And that I think is the biggest story. That is of all of this, because, you know, once it starts to unravel, I've said this for a long time, Donald Trump thinks that he beat the system because he was smart. He didn't. New York real estate has been so mobbed up and screwy for so long that they had an aversion to pulling the thread. But now, just like in Vegas, as the mob has moved out and gentrified and turned into corporations, and you no longer have to, you know, you've got a board you can adjudicate your differences in terms of territorial use and whether your chips can be used someplace else and all that kind of crap. Once you can work that out peacefully, and, you know, even by the way, softly bribe someone as opposed to dropping them in the desert in a garbage bag, right? And burying them like, you know, Joe Pesci at the end of Goodfellas or whatever, you know, or Casino, I think. You know, once that's over, it a lot of it is normalized. The same thing is becoming true of New York City. New York for a long time was mobbed up, and then Rudy Giuliani famously broomed the Italian mob out, let the Russian and the Chinese move in. You know, Jared Kushner and his father played footsie with these guys for a very long time.
Oh, yeah.
But quite frankly, you can make an honest killing in New York now without those people. And so it's a crucial part of this conversation. And I look forward to it coming out this week. It's going to be my favorite. And that's what Donald Trump fears the most, is that you'll get a look behind the curtain and see that not only is he a phony like the Wizard of Oz, but it's not even him. We'll be back right after this. Phil Bittner will be joining us from Kiev. And take care of yourself. We'll be back right after this.
I've had people walk out of me before, but not when I was being so charming.
Video streaming at HowSparks.com.
Well, I don't care for you or for the putrid sludge you're troweling out.
Us faithful, pimpstick.
True progressive talk.
Might be a good time for you guys to give up.
Welcome back. So thanks, everybody, for joining us. We're here every Saturday. We hope you can be, too. Johnny Million still can. Yeah. Joining us is Philip Bittner. He's got his own YouTube channel, and he's been broadcasting and vlogging and showing up on shows and carrying the story of Ukraine since the beginning of the war, and has been an invaluable resource both to this show and I think the conversation overall. Phil, welcome back to the show, and how are you, first and foremost?
I'm good. We've had a couple of days of pretty intense air attacks ever since the incursion by Russian forces into to kind of the Belgorod area internally inside right. Russia. And I suspect, given the events of the last 24 hours or so, with the attack in Moscow, that whether or not Ukraine had anything to do with it at all, which I am very skeptical of. But regardless, I think we can anticipate that Russia will be sending heavy munitions here in the over the next, you know, tonight and going into the next few days, because that's what
they do. So. Well, that's, you know, I got to say, I called it this morning when I was like looking into the story, you know, and sort of the next day story online. I was calling it today, of course, Operation Beat Him Until He Says Ukraine commences immediately. And they're showing these four guys in the same car they left the venue in an area where they're saying is close to the Ukrainian border, which is, by the way, may I point out that it's not the Ukrainian border. It's the border of Russia and the territory currently Russia has seized as its own.
Occupied, yeah.
Where the Chechens
are. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Any Ukraine. If you want to talk about they made a break for the Ukrainian border, then technically speaking, in a war zone, what you mean is the front line. And they weren't anywhere near that. They weren't even anywhere near really the border itself. So it's an absurdity.
Yeah, and it's a far more porous border up near the Baltic states, up near St. Petersburg, or even Finland to a certain degree now. Even though Finland is now a NATO member, there's still a lot of cross-border traffic going on there. Sure. In some ways by Russia trying to create a migration crisis. But anyhow, regardless, it would have been smarter to go north and instead of south. But look, it is way too early to start pinning this on people. It is still this.
Well, ISIS claimed
and also ISIS claimed credit for it. That's
credit.
Right.
There's plenty
of reason for ISIS-K is the particular a branch of ISIS that has claimed responsibility for it. Now, ISIS-K is built on this kind of amorphous grouping of ethnic and tribal associations in Afghanistan, Iran, Tajikistan, and Uzbekistan. And there's a long history of Islamic radicalization in that area. There's a very fertile area called the Fergana Valley where the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan, for example, used to take refuge. They would fight in Afghanistan and then retreat back across the border. And they would. There's a long-standing animosity between Islam and Moscow, despite what Moscow would have you believe that all ethnicities are respected in the Russian Federation. It's not true. Islam is very much stamped down upon. They have a serious separatist problem in Chechnya, obviously, or Ishkiria. If you're going to be, if you pay respects to the people of that country, they call themselves Ishkirians, not Chechnyans. But across the border, there's also Dagestanis, Ossetians. The Caucasus have often been described as the soft underbelly of Russia, and with the concentration in Ukraine and the preoccupation and the draw of assets for Russia, in their fight in Ukraine, it is understandable, it is entirely possible that because they are distracted to their west, that this southern underbelly of these separatist movements, many of whom are, Muslim, who are radicalized Muslim, that they could take advantage of this and make attacks because they've got, hundreds of years, decades certainly, right, since the fall of the Soviet Union, where they have these grievances. So it's it is entirely possible this is this was an ISIS operation. It is also entirely possible it's a false flag.
Yeah, and Russia has apparently, first of all, the U.S. warned Russia earlier, like last week, that they had intelligence, and under their duty to warn policy, which is a law, actually, an international law and a law that we, you know, we participate in, that if you know there's going to be a terrorist attack, even if it's your enemy, you have to let them know. We let them know. And Putin's response to it 3 days before the attack was, it's blackmail by the West, which is super weird. Like, what are you talking about? Why? What are they? They didn't ask for anything, stupid. They just told you, it, you know, this was going to happen. That's it. Click. It's
very and warned the, and warned their citizens, warned any American or dual nationals that are, that were in Russia to avoid large gatherings. And, and you know, that's their duty to their citizens. You have to put that out. So, look, it has all the markings of a false flag as well, because, you know, this is how Putin rose to power in the very first place. I was living in Moscow when I saw Putin's rise to power, and I went to the apartment buildings and I spoke to people at those apartment buildings who were absolutely 100% in the belief that it was the Russian security forces that had done it. And I've talked about it in the past many times.
Sure,
but if you rise to power by blowing up your own people in an apartment building, who's to say you wouldn't do this as well? There was the incident in 2002, which this has shades of, where there was a theater that was taken over by Chechens, and the security forces went in and gassed everybody, so there were no, you know, there were no witnesses. It's just the whole thing.
Let's go back over that one, because that's probably the one that is closest to this circumstance. It's interesting, and it might be the one that you know other terrorist organizations who want to carry out a similar attack learned from. Don't hole up in there because they don't care, and they'll take credit for the dead. Yeah. You can't. Right. They just went in there and they just wiped out everybody. And they like Russians are tough and they can take it. And that was that. And so it feels like there was a lot that that this particular group learned from that horrifying.
Or Beslan, the that horrific shooting in at the school in Beslan, and which was that was Chechen separatists. That I have friends. I was not there in Beslan, but I have friends who were, and that was definitely Chechens. But you're right. Holding up in a place is not the smartest thing to do, because eventually the Russians will come at you and they don't care. In the case of the 2002 theater, and I remember that attack very clearly.
I remember it was on the news for a few, like, I want to say a couple of days, like specifically about the hole up in the hostage.
Yeah, and then they pumped the place with gas, and they were not as cautious as they should have been with the mixture of the airborne narcotic or the gas or whatever. And so they ended up killing many of the hostages, the Russian security forces themselves, by basically giving them an overdose of this. You know, gas. And so a lot of the their own civilians died there. But in addition to that, what I also remember distinctly from that period, because I was in Moscow again also during that period, was that there was talk of the security forces when they went into the theater. There were Chechen terrorists. They were terrorists. And they were still alive, and they were executed by the security forces. The Russian security forces went up. They were these Chechen terrorists. They were groggy, but they were alive. But instead of taking them custody and pumping them for information, the Russians just executed them, which a lot of alarm bells went off on that one as well. So, of course, Moscow is already starting to blame Ukraine and Ukrainians, but this is not their MO. It would be very unusual for the Ukrainians to have done this for a variety of reasons, not least of which is because they don't want to come off as terrorists. And this was, you know, you're rounding up civilians and you're killing them. That's, you know, this would be a
terror.
Right
now, just on Russian Telegram, and take that with a grain of salt, however you want, but I would think they would lean away from ISIS if they could in any way blame Ukraine. They're going to try. But according to like Astra and a couple of the other Z sites that I've looked at, they are posting stuff from the Amaq site, the official ISIS site, that says IS reveals four fighters involved in Moscow concert hall operation, boasts fiercest attack in years. And they show pictures of two of the guys that are wearing the same clothes they were found in. There's also a they clearly, like, the Russians, when they caught these guys, tortured them. And there is a a guy wearing a neo-Nazi patch, which is very strange, in the Russian brigade that caught these guys, who is selling the – he cut the ear off of one of these guys, and he's selling he goes, should I – he basically said, should I sell the knife on eBay? These – and again, the idea that they would scoop up these four guys and that this story is there – like so quickly and all this stuff. I think we all, maybe we're all burned.
They did the same thing. They did the same thing in 1999 with the apartment bombings and the metro bombings in Moscow. They grabbed a bunch of people that it was never really truly proven that they were involved, but they trotted them out in front of the cameras, and they'd all been, of course, beaten and the rest of it. But it was performative, and there's so much about this that is very questionable on so many different levels. And it will be fodder for both the people who support Ukraine and those who are, you know, Vatniks and support Russia's cause.
Right. Exactly. We got to take a break. Well, more on that when we come back. And of course, the weird, non-response from Putin right afterwards. Other world leaders had responded very quickly to it. It took him hours and hours for some odd reason. And again, there's a myriad of reasons. But again, the people that were killed in this concert hall did not have it coming in any way. And the question of whether these guys are guilty will never be answered because it's Russia. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to the Hal Sparks radio program, Mega Worldwide.
The incident itself is as horrifying as any mass shooting any of us have ever seen anywhere. There's a lot of similarities to it. And again, the hard part is dealing with the fact that the Russians themselves are not a trusted source in any of these situations. Have been known to use, you know, false flags inside their own country. As much as Alex Jones and others talk about U.S. false flags and yada yada, and try to make 9/11 one of them, and or even, for God's sake, Pearl Harbor. It's almost like we've almost got like a cartoonish understanding. General Putnam in the chat is saying, are you showing a video? No, I am not. I can't show it online or it will be, my show will be taken down. There's too much. Showing it to Johnny and Phil so they know what I'm referencing behind the scenes, because I have no reason to show this on my channel.
It's not worth it for
that kind of public consumption. Nope. But what I will say is that considering the apartment fire and the Chechen theater hostage attack, which is, one was an absolute false flag, the other was manipulated and used, and they just didn't care. The total loss of human life was, there were more people killed by the Russians that day than were killed by the Chechens, but they didn't want to give them the ability to, I guess, take hostages. So they were like, better we kill them than somebody else, which is what they call the dead agent proposition, where if you have an operative or an agent killed, you don't try to send somebody in to save him. You send somebody in to kill him because he can't give anything away. And if they catch your second guy, you send in somebody dumber than him to kill him is the idea. And so that's another variation of this theme. So, and again, like I said, ISIS has claimed this initially they were like, we don't know if we can trust it. We don't know if it's real. The number of dead I've seen all over the place, but at current count, it's about 150. Yeah. It's just terrible.
It's awful. Of course. Yeah. But it is, I am not one who will blindly put my faith in anything, but I will say this does not this is not Ukraine's MO. This is not their modus operandi. No. This is not how they operate. There's been criticism of how, for example, they went into Russian territory in Belgorod, and there's accusations of, you know, artillery being just lobbed into Belgorod by Ukrainian or pro-Ukrainian or allied Ukrainian Russian forces in Belgorod. But that's a whole, I mean, and I'm willing to entertain those accusations and discuss those. Unlike the Russians, you know, I won't just blindly resist it. Right. We can talk about it. But this attack in this theater, it's not what the Ukrainians do.
No.
This is not their MO. 100%. Killing 150 people with small arms fire in a concert hall is only going to harm their cause. Exactly. And they know that. They're smarter than that. The Ukrainians, whether it's GUR, the military intelligence, or, you know, some sort of covert espionage or guerrilla group.
That's right.
This is not what they would strike. They would strike something that had a military aspect or a financial or even political, but not just civilians, because it's counterproductive to their interests. I would be absolutely, it would change, it would force me to reevaluate a lot. Sure. And I've been here for too long. I know these people too well. This is not the Ukrainians.
It's an absurdity.
No, it's not.
What I will say is that, you know, here's what it is most likely. If you want to talk about what Don Jr. called yesterday, Achman's razor. I'm not kidding.
Did
not
he really Don say Senior, that?
Oh. Not Trump. Don Achman's Jr. said razor. Achman's razor, which is not to be confused with Eichmann's razor, which is a horrible implement as well. Here's what I would say is that the Achman's razor version of this is that it's a real event caused by real terrorists, because the Russians had been killing ISIS members inside Russia and inside a couple of other countries over the last month.
Syria.
2 months, they've killed three
look at
members
their,
of ISIS.
You know, they killed Muslims.
Yes. Well, yes. Yeah. And they sided with Assad against ISIS and the others, whatever. Everybody, by the way, was against ISIS in that area, but specifically they sided with the government of Syria, which had more resources than the rebels did. And so therefore it was more probably impactful. And Russia, to placate or build a relationship with Assad, probably baited some of these idiots out with all kinds of promises, because they'll engage in all kinds of this stuff. But I would say it's a real event, but Russia will use it and try to spin it into something else. That seems like that is most likely, much like the Chechen. The Chechen attack was real Chechens really doing something. The response from Russia was very Russian, but at the same time that they used it as a precursor to go into.
And I also wouldn't put it past Putin to have done this as a false flag. Look, you know, you're absolutely right. This will be one way or the other. This is going to be used by the Kremlin and by Putin to make accusations against Ukraine. And they'll try and pin it on the West. They'll say it's MI6 or the CIA or.
Right.
You know, whatever else. But, you know, there's every chance of a false flag, because we know Putin has done this to his own people in the past. But in addition to that, they have a long-standing issue with Islamic radicals in the Caucasus and Central Asia. And they are completely focused on Ukraine currently, leaving the door open for very real, you know, Islamic, ISIS-K, you know, very absolutely 100%. They have beef with Moscow, and they have for centuries.
Yeah. Right.
You know, look, it doesn't seem to me to be something the Ukrainian forces would do or would support, because it would be counterproductive. But never say never. If I were a betting man, I would say it's either a false flag or it is what it purports to be, ISIS-K.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, you can use these things for your own purposes. Sure. And I would argue that that's what
we're going to get pelted.
Happen.
We're going to get pelted. We're going to get absolutely pelted in the next two or three days. Whether or not it's legit or not, we'll see an increase in attacks.
And there's, by the way, there's no shortage of right wingers and faux aggressives calling, you know, ISIS a creation of Israel, and that Israel did this as an attack on Russia for siding with Iran and something else. Now, never mind the fact that the other thing about ISIS-K, and this is real important. One is ISIS-K is the organization behind the suicide bomber that killed American soldiers during the evacuation of Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. The Taliban, I believe, this is my own personal tactical opinion of the circumstance. They have an off and on relationship controlling these guys, and have strategically at different times allowed them to do awful because they could benefit from it in the same way that Putin will do in some cases. So they let these guys through because all the smart people that were in the, you know, in Afghanistan, when the government started to fall, they started fleeing the country, and they were going out through the civilian side of the airport while we were going out through the other side of the airport. We were getting our people out. Our soldiers were guarding the Afghan civilians who were trying to escape on commercial planes, right? They were leaving, and that bomber went into that side. The soldiers that were killed were in that radius as they were trying to help Afghan civilians flee to other countries, not even to the United States, just in general. And they were trying to stop the brain drain. I think they let them through, and they scared everybody from going to that airport. And after that, it did work. They went to the Pakistani border, and they went to the Iranian border, depending on where they could most likely find, you know, or the quickest route or the safest route. ISIS-K is a Pakistani offshoot of anti-Taliban or old Taliban crowd. And Iran, again, you know, has been in this weird dust-up lately with Pakistan. It's very curious that it's gotten, you know, increasingly worse. And, you know, ISIS-K, you know, the concern is that if Iran got a nuke, their first target wouldn't be Israel because of the blowback and all the other stuff. The first target would be Pakistan because they want portions of it, or they want to shut down parts that are bothering them. So there's a lot going on there. But ISIS-K is the one that attacked Qasem Soleimani's funeral procession and killed all those people in Iran. And Iran and Russia have been aligned around this. There is, you know, this is right in line with that. I would say it has more in common with the attack on Qasem Soleimani's funeral procession than almost anything else. This war is fighting that they're fighting amongst themselves is something that goes on regardless of whether Ukraine, Russia is happening, or even Israel and Hamas. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's also a tribal element to it. You know, the ISIS-K includes Tajiks, Hazaris, Uzbeks.
Right.
The Pashto, which is the predominant group in Afghanistan, are not the main contributing element to ISIS-K. There's no love lost, for example, between ISIS-K and the Taliban. And part of that is religious and part of that is ethnic. I mean, a lot of the ethnic and tribal difficulties in Afghanistan get very, very complex. And especially when they bleed over into other Central Asian countries and ethnic groups. So there's a lot going on here. And as you know, you're 100% right that there's a lot of conflict that is fomenting. I mean, look at the uprising, you know, the increase in conflict between Armenia and Azerbaijan. over Nagorno-Karabakh. While Russia and Moscow are completely preoccupied and are fighting this existential, you know, fight to the death, basically, over what will be Russia in the future if they lose their colony of Ukraine. Moscow is completely consumed with this and consumed with the idea of confronting NATO and the West. While all that's happening, there are age-old disagreements in that part of the world. They're coming home to roost.
Yeah, and also everybody's got an opinion about this. And a lot of them are diverging even amongst the Putin loyalists. So it's a fascinating look into the uniformity of thought and its fissures. We'll talk about that on the way back.
You're locked into the Hal Sparks radio program, Mega Worldwide.
So you know, when a world leader goes through something like this, having a prepared response, especially in, you know, as it happens fairly, you know, your staff prepares within, I'd say, a 4-hour window, unless it's overnight, right in the middle of the night. You do it first thing the next morning as far as addressing it, right? But a lot of this happened about, you know, like there were still fire trucks there, you know, just getting there at 3 o'clock in the morning. And so then, you know, waiting till the next, like, early evening, it took Putin 12 hours when it happened to address the country. He declared the March 24th, a day of national mourning. He claimed that a back door had been prepared for the suspects in the attack so they could cross the border with Ukraine. Right. He said that the instigators will be justly punished. He said, as for the investigation, I can tell you the following. All four perpetrators have been found and detained. What luck in a huge country. They just drove the same car. Did they? They sought to escape and were moving towards Ukraine. Where a backdoor had been prepared for them to cross the border again into Chechen held areas.
And then, you know, Moscow is also, you know, it's a surveillance state. There are cameras everywhere in Moscow.
Yeah.
Right.
That leads me to be
right
suspicious.
For all the people who are wondering why we haven't caught the people who built the gallows on January 6th or saying it's hinky because there was they haven't caught the person who laid the pipe bombs at the DNC and the RNC on January 5th. I don't want to hear from any of those folks that all of a sudden they're like believing the state word. We got them. It's immediate. We have all these cameras everywhere, but the only footage we have of these guys is from cell phones, and we caught them near the border, and they just all happen to be, you know.
And they like, did the same feet. Thing. They did the exact same thing in the 1999 right. apartment buildings. They rounded up guys, you know, that fit the profile, and the profile is, you know, either Caucasus or Central Asia. Suspects. Yep. And they were trotted out in front of the public and you know, it's just, there's so much about this that is, and again, it's still very early days, but there's so, and they, again, also you can't trust the Russians because they lie all the time.
Right.
You know, constantly. Mm-hmm. So your information source, your primary information source is suspect. And we know that Putin has done this before. So, it's way too early to know exactly what has happened. I find it very troubling that they're instantly going for this. It was done in collaboration with Ukraine, even if it wasn't Ukrainian. So the back door, quote unquote, was created for them to escape. It plays right into their narrative.
Back door into territory held by the Chechens. Forget it. Like at that point, it just falls dead. And again, it's real easy to address because, again, Russia holds that territory right now. So if they were fleeing to areas, again, full of Russian, you know, fighters, you know, to a Chechen area, it makes total sense. Maybe there's a, you know, they've had issues with this and the Kadyrov clan and all that crowd that still got a bone to pick with Mother Russia for a long time. By the way, the Crocus City Hall, I'm used to the word crocus being spelled with K's because of the band. Right. And so I'm pronouncing that correctly, right? Crocus in this. Yeah. Yeah. And it's in Krasnogorsk, in a suburb of Moscow. The Center for Countering Disinformation at the National Security and Defense Council of Ukraine says that it has all the markings of a disinfo attack. And because they're going to, I think partly because they believe they're going to use it against as a reason to attack Ukraine more.
And for this to happen right on the heels of the fake election that has secured Vladimir Putin another 6 years. But what he needs to do is he needs to shore up resolve for the war here. And they've started calling it a war now. They've openly said it is against the West and not just against Ukraine. This will give them support in a lot of sectors within Russia. internationally, it will get, you know, get them support, even if it's, you know, it is not. I reiterate, this doesn't fit Ukrainian MO, but it'll serve their purposes. It'll absolutely serve their purposes, which may, you know, it's the old saying, who benefits, you know, and the Kremlin mm-hmm. benefits from this horrific event more than anybody else. You know,
right.
The second contender would be ISIS-K or you know, Islamic terrorists.
The weird thing is that there was
not
there was a Ukrainian attack. There was a Ukrainian length attack inside Russia on that same day. It was in the Kuybyshev oil refinery. If I'm Kuybyshev in Samara Oblast. That they're just continuing to do that. That's it's working again. Mm-hmm. This is one of those things where like the refinery hits that they've been doing, where they're hitting the infrastructure of the refinery and not like the mess hall or the gathering place or where the lockers are essentially on the site. They're hitting the far out ends of the pipes and the containers where, you know, very few people are walking around. And if they hear a drone overhead, have time to run away. Certainly they're hitting, you know, the Ukrainians have been hitting those. And having a terrific effect. They've shut down effectively diesel and gas exports from mm-hmm. Russia. They've had to pass a law to keep them in the country. They've choked off like India because of U.S. sanctions and increased, you know, international sanctions has stopped receiving Russian oil. So they not only, you know, can't move their refined product, they can't move the raw stuff either. Right. And the Ukrainian strategy is working. So why would you ever do something like this? And like I said, I think it's garbage. I think the reality is that
doesn't make sense.
Russia dropped their guard because they either they're smoking their own stash or they're believing their own hype man, reading their own press, you know, believing their own reviews, their own press, and just missed it. And you could tell by you know Putin's you know we warned them and three days before it happened. And they blew it off.
We have good intel. We still have good intel sources within Afghanistan and in Tajikistan. Let's keep in mind that, you know, during the entire war, we had an air base for logistical support of Afghanistan in Dushanbe in Tajikistan. So, you know, we have intel resources.
We have for a long time. Anybody who's watched Spies Like Us knows about
Asia, baby.
Right? Because they land in Pakistan and then they move through Tajikistan towards on the road to Dushanbe. They talk about that's they're plotting their direction into it and how they have to cross the mountains to get there and all that stuff. And the Yusufzai and all the other groups, and they cover it pretty well. Aykroyd's pretty good about his details. All of his comedies start out as dramas. It's pretty funny in that regard. So
it's entirely possible we had some sort of either signal intelligence or human intelligence that tipped us off to it. But of course now those who are so inclined will say, oh, well, clear. Which if you were the CIA or you were MI6, the last thing you would do is broadcast, warn them.
Right.
Of course, that's going to draw attention.
And if you want to benefit from it, you just keep your mouth shut and let it happen. Yeah. It's so weird. Like, if you wanted it to happen, there is no value in bringing it up.
If you were behind it or if you felt you could benefit from it, the last thing you would do is say, hey, broad warning to all American citizens in Russia, don't go to large. I mean, it just plays into the narrative. Why would you do that? So, you know, it's I can't believe it. It just
Why would you interrupt Jimmy Dore's vacation?
You know,
just so by the way, we haven't gotten to questions because we've been dealing with this a lot or whatever.
Sure. I've got one. Johnny, I've got one here. It was a super chat. I want to remind you do not have to super chat. But thank you, Pool Picker Upper. You don't have to super chat to ask a question. Just at me in the chat. Johnny, can you ask Phil about...
That's right. Oh, we appreciate it.
Yeah, we do appreciate it.
It's important. You know,
can you ask Phil about farmers moving to Russia because of their sudden stand on LGBTQ? All of a sudden, I've been getting this video on YouTube, and they didn't know language was required, assets seized.
Yeah, this is a Canadian family that moved to somewhere outside of Ekaterinburg because they're religious zealots, and they found out that moving to a country where you don't speak the language and which has draconian laws. Mm-hmm. Laws in quotation marks, and financial, you know, the difficulties in moving money into that they went over to Russia thinking great white nationalist country like Russia will be wonderful to move to, and then they realized, hey, it's really hard when you don't speak the language and when you don't know the country or the customs or the laws or anything like that. Dumb family, poor children. Feel sorry for them.
Yeah, basically Canadian maggots who bought the story that they'll do anything to escape the gay. And so they moved over there, and they had their money was seized. Mm-hmm. Their assets were frozen.
I'm sure now that the spotlight of public opinion is on them, that the Russians will make everything good and they'll get their money.
Well, I think they came back.
The wife was frustrated because of the language barrier. I'm not following this every single day. It's not important enough. Yeah. They're ridiculous people.
So I'm not going to waste time following
them exactly, right, whether or not they came back or not. But, you know, it's just, moving to Russia and actually going to Russia because you believe that it's more accommodating for your white Christian nationalism is a really incredibly stupid thing to do. So no sympathy except for the children.
Yeah, we got to take a break. We'll be back with some more questions from our chat room at infotainmentwars.com or twitch.tv/HalSparks or on the Facebook page or on X/Molly, which is what I call it now, after this break. We'll be back.
I am happy, you are happy, let us be happy together, whether the weather is cloudy or sunny, I will always be your funny honey bunny. I am lucky, you are lucky, let us get lucky together, whether the weather is cloudy or breezy, I'll be there to say, hey, come on, let's take it easy. Cause isn't it nice to have the friends that you do, and isn't it nice that the sky is so blue, and isn't it nice to say I love you, chugga chugga choo choo, woo woo. I am smiling, you are smiling, let us smile together, whether the weather is cloudy or stormy, I will still be there in the morning, I'll be right by your side in the morning, I'll make you breakfast in the morning, I hope that you like cereal.
Yay!
Don't haunt Johnny Million with your weird cat testicles.
Don't do it.
And people on the radio have no idea what we're talking about.
No.
Yes. Let's jump straight into the questions because I will get
we'll get lost in the weeds here.
Sure, I've got a question from Seattle. Susie Q, ask Phil what he thinks about the warning from the U.S. State Department about the Moscow attack means.
Well, again, if it was actually the CIA behind this or MI6 or whatever putting up, you know, some sort of group to do this, the last thing you would do is put out a warning beforehand. It just makes absolutely no sense. So I think we had some intelligence. I think we had some proper intelligence that ISIS-K was going to launch an attack against Moscow. They've had beef against. This is not unusual. This is not without provocation or not without a motive. They are really. There's a huge part of the Islamic world that is furious at Moscow, not only for what they did in Syria, but for suppressing their own Muslim populations in the Caucasus in particular. And then also, if you really want to go for it, I mean, there's also the Crimean Peninsula. There's an Islamic parliament which deals with issues for the Muslim Tatar population there. They have disappeared. So, you know, that is another reason why there's the Ummah, the Islamic world, has beef with Moscow. So it's entirely, but it doesn't make any sense that the U.S., if they were behind it, would forecast it, would broadcast it to the world before it. That warning, if anything, it discredits the possibility that CIA was involved.
Yeah. Real quick, I want to show folks something. I don't know if it'll come up clearly on the on the screen because it's always kind of iffy. But there was an article about the rise of the U.S. as the top oil producer. Right now, the United States is the world's biggest producer of oil. 14.7% of oil is produced by the United States of all the oil in the world. Saudi Arabia is second with 13.2. Russia is third with 12.8. They were tied at one point, and now Russia has gone down. Everybody else is down in the 5%. Canada, 5%. Iraq, 5%. China, 5.1%, which is hilarious because it's not even theirs. And the UAE and the like. But this is a great graphic. I'll pass it around online later on that will upset maggots. Just saying. Okay. So, sorry. Next question.
Next question from Jamie Weatherhog. Is it possible that ISIS-K was funded by MBS?
I mean,
you know what MBS is.
Yeah, that's Bin Salman.
The Saudi crown prince.
I mean, look, Saudi and ISIS, as with Al Qaeda, there's some murky ties there. So, Saudi doesn't particularly have beef with Moscow. So I don't know why they would back them up for this particular attack. But there are, take your pick of any Sunni Muslim terrorist group, and Saudi's going to have some sort of connection to them. So I don't think they were behind this attack. I don't think MBS would have been. There's nothing in it really for MBS.
Unless they need a break of chaos, which is there's always a chance
that's a lot of heat.
Yeah,
that's a lot of heat for very little.
Back to you. Yeah,
yeah, man. Right. If you get caught out, if you're MBS and you get caught out as being even remotely connected to this, it's high risk, little reward. No, I think it was ISIS-K acting on its own, or it was a false flag. It was not the Ukrainians, and it was not the West. I'd be very comfortable in putting a bet on that.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
We've got another question here from Mary P. What does Phil know about the musical group Picnic, who are the group supposed to be playing the event? The group has been around for decades, I believe. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm aware of them. I don't know their music very well. I'm not a big I like a few bands from like the late 90s and stuff in Russia. I don't know their music very well. I'm sure it's Russian metal pop kind of junk.
Right.
I'm not a big fan of Russian pop music. So,
right.
No, I don't. Well, I don't know much about them. Johnny, yeah, aside from the fact of what I've learned previously. Or now in this circumstance, them being anti-war.
A song called Bang Bang by a Russian band that they played at the Moscow Music Peace Festival in the day. Remember? Bang
Bang. If you want to look. I remember that.
Come around. I want to hear something like that. That was all right.
My favorite singer is a woman by the name of Zemfira. Who does very kind of like soulful, grungy kind of pop
she's
music.
She's like a Russian Zamfir.
She's more like a Pearl Jam, that kind of vibe. Okay. There's Machine of Vremenia, which is a time machine. And Time Machine is like their Who or Rolling Stones. They've been around forever. They're an institution. And they've come out against the war, but they've kind of all fled Russia. I was aware of them, but I couldn't pick out a song.
Right. Me neither. Now people are going to check them out. And largely the information that they were against the war,
sadly,
and still managed to tour is kind of one of the most curious aspects of the whole story.
Yep. Yep.
And that was Big Little targeted.
There's another good Russian band, Big Little. Those guys are weird. Those are the guys that did the very strange band, Big Little. But check out Zemfira or Big Little. Yeah, Big Little. Those are the guys.
Well, I do find it curious if I'm going to tinfoil hat for a moment. One of the things that will make me do that is the fact that Picnic is this band that was allowed to criticize the war, and it was their concert that was hit.
Sure. If we're going to go with the false flag narrative, it would
You're going to gather a bunch of fans who won't be against the war. That's going to be the band where you've got people in the room to, you know, convince these people that we need to. And if you could talk those people into it, was Ukraine was behind it, then you win over the, you know, the lagging group of people without having to actually convince them. You scare them into being anti-Ukraine where they may have not been before, because it's very weird that these guys could still tour and that their show was hit and that their fans. I mean, if you're going to go to one of their shows, you know that part of it. Right. You know, they've come out against the war. They've been against it. And you know that being there can be a little, you know, you can get you on a list, maybe. And maybe it did. Maybe that's how they ended up getting hit. So let's
This one's from Nick Rich. Have the European Union and NATO weapons arrived as anticipated?
European weapons have. Western weapons have not. F-16s will be here very soon. Hopefully, we will also be getting the ATACMS, which are longer range missiles, and some more cruise missiles from the Europeans. Hopefully, the Germans will finally get on board with that as well. It's still the U.S. that's dragging its feet, though, and we still have to pressure our elected officials, and I urge you all to do it. To try and get that bill on the floor. You know, I think we're still 30 names short on the discharge petition. The Republicans, because it was put forward by the Democrats, are saying they're not interested, which is shameful. But call your elected officials and pressure them to get that discharge petition signed so we can get this bill on the floor. And even then, it's going to be about a month before U.S. Weapons start to
There was Ukrainian money in this budget that passed. That was one of the big reasons why the Freedom Caucus was freaking out about it. I would argue there were actually more diversion elements in there that the administration can use to the tune of, you know, a major
still not enough
ammunition
though.
And other stuff.
Still not enough. We need the $60 billion.
I agree.
And it's not good that we are delaying on it the way we are. And Ukrainians are gracious people, and they have been very appreciative for the help that we've already given them. But I can tell you that there is a lot of frustration right now and a lot of anxiety about the U.S. no longer being a reliable partner.
Yeah.
Rightfully so.
Sure. Understood.
Sadly.
We're near the end of the show. I want to remind everybody to check out Philip Bittner's YouTube page. And then philipbittner.com, which is his site. He's launching a podcast. They're building a studio over there, so we can interview people that are there, both journalists and people involved in it. Very excited to see that. Johnny Million's got his live stream on Twitch and YouTube under It's Johnny Million. And, of course, I live stream 5 days a week, sometimes twice a day, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And then, of course, we're here every Saturday for the show. Patreon.com. Sparks, a great way to support the show. And you get a free comedy show next Friday when I'm at Flappers. I stream that for our patrons. It's the only thing that's behind technically a paywall so that all the information gets out and we don't have to throttle or bottleneck any of it, because it's important that people know the stuff we're talking about here. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Thanks, WCPT. And by the way, sexyliberal.com/tour. We're coming to your town.
Yeah.
At the top and the bottom of the show every day. Take care, and we'll see you next time. A taste of the shutter.